happy. Okay, we're going to be switching gears now. We're going to be talking about the issue of black land ownership in the United States. And we're going to be painting first the big picture and then talking to a young lady who is fighting to keep her land in Virginia. I'd like to first welcome onto the airwaves Thomas Mitchell, calling in from Wisconsin. Professor Thomas Mitchell is a professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School, where he directs the program in real estate, land use, and community development. He's been doing a lot of things in this arena of black land ownership, and he is, in fact, a national expert on property issues which impact African Americans. And I'll say he was also a graduate of Howard University Law School. So although he's not here in D.C. now, he has lived in D.C. He also was in the same law practice as former Attorney General Eric Holder. So we're very happy and thankful to have Professor Thomas Mitchell joining us on the airwaves. Welcome, Professor Mitchell.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
And likewise. First of all, paint the historical picture of what's been happening over the last, since the end of the Civil War. I know that's a lot to cover in a minute, but there's been a significant problem with black people losing their land. So give us that historical perspective.
Sure. As I think that we all know, African Americans went from having the status of being defined as property that white Americans could own up until the end of the Civil War. Many folks know that the government, the U.S. government, made a promise to African Americans to redistribute land at the end of the conclusion of the Civil War. We know that iconically as the promise of 40 acres and a mule. That was tied to, at the conclusion of the Civil War, an order issued by General Sherman, Field Order Number 15, that was issued on January 16th, 1865. And in that field order, the U.S. government declared as abandoned land, land owned by Confederates, that stretched from the Georgia Sea Islands as far south as Savannah, Georgia, to Charleston, South Carolina, talking about a half million acres of agricultural land that was declared. I think, as many folks know, the U.S. government ended up not fulfilling in full part that promise, although there were some folks who did get land under that field order and who ended up getting title, but most folks didn't. Well, I think most, in my experience, most people are not aware of was that between 1865 at the end of the Civil War and 1920, African Americans actually did acquire between at least 16 million acres of agricultural land and maybe as much as 19 million acres. Most of this land that was acquired by African Americans was acquired by purchase from white landowners. So you have in 1920 that represented the high water mark of black land ownership in this country. Unfortunately, what we've seen since 1920 is a steady erosion of that ownership base within the African American community. There's certain drivers, of course, of that land loss. I mean, a certain portion of it was sold in voluntary transfers as African Americans perhaps wanted to leave the South and pursue opportunities outside of the South. But a lot of that land was not lost in any voluntary transfer. It was lost in involuntary and forced transfers.
In other words, it was stolen.
It was stolen, right. You have a variety of ways in which it was stolen, right? So you have land that was stolen as a result of direct violence, physical threats, intimidation, where it was made clear to folks they didn't just abandon their land and get out of town. They would be lynched or killed. And to this end, if anybody wants to you know, get a nice or a good summary of some of these extra legal mechanisms. The Associated Press in 2001 did a 6-month investigative series on the loss of African-American-owned land. The series is called Torn from the Land. It won all kinds of national media awards, and that details both some of the extra legal and legal mechanisms. So obviously, violence, intimidation played a significant role. In addition to that, there have been various legal procedures and mechanisms used to steal or take land involuntarily from African Americans. And let me just mention four of those. So we have eminent domain. And, you know, interestingly enough, the Supreme Court decided a case 10 years ago now, Kelo versus the City of New London, where essentially you had a group of white homeowners in New London, Connecticut, who ended up having their land taken by eminent domain. It sparked the largest sense of outrage among the American public generally of any Supreme Court decision in the last 40, 50, 60 years. Interestingly enough, the owners of that land in New London were white, middle-class landowners. And what's interesting is that actually, if you look at the history of the use of eminent domain, it's mostly been used to take land from African Americans who rarely were compensated the fair market value of their property. But in all the decades it had been used to take African American-owned land, there had been no national outcry. So it's eminent domain. You have foreclosures, obviously, in the last, since the Great Recession, we know of, you know, thousands and thousands of African Americans who've lost their homes through foreclosure. You have a legal procedure called adverse possession, where essentially if somebody occupies your land for a certain period of time and you don't protest that, you can lose your land through that mechanism. And then the last one I'll talk about is one that I've done a lot of work on. It's called, it's a form of common ownership that's very common within the African-American community, whether it's the property is in rural America or it's in urban centers. It's called, the legal term is tenancy in common, but most black folks know that as heirs property. And there's a legal mechanism in this form of common ownership where just one of the common owners could walk into the local courthouse, request the judge to order the property forcibly sold at a public auction, usually on the courthouse steps, within 2 to 4 weeks of the judge ordering that, and then with the distribution of the money proceeds to the various common owners. So the partitions have been responsible for poor and disadvantaged and African Americans losing millions of acres of land over the last several decades, and I could talk a little bit later in the show about a slightly more optimistic term.
Yes, we're going to get to that in a minute. And unfortunately, we have a lot to cover in this program, so we'll definitely be coming back to this issue. But I just wanted to share a quote that I heard at this conference at Union Temple on Saturday by Claude Anderson. African Americans own 0.5% of all the wealth in the United States. Two rich white men own more wealth than all 43 million black people in the United States. So as we know, racism comes in many forms, and this ripoff of black land is just one more example. Professor Mitchell, I'm going to ask you to share quickly the good news, and then we're going to go hear, or perhaps let's hear first from our person sitting here with us in the studio, Raz Hyman, who is right here in Washington, D.C. She actually has a hair salon in Rockville. And she is engaged right now in a battle to keep her land. She is the owner and CEO of Freeman Eco Farms Incorporated, which is located in, well, maybe you share with us, where is your land located? And welcome, Ross.
Thank you, Joni, and thank you, Dr. Mitchell for coming in on a last-minute presentation, and you were definitely the one to cover the framework for this plight, I must say. My name is Melinda Hyman. I'm known as Raz Hyman in the hair industry. I am an owner of a hair salon of 14 years now, and now I have become a farmer because I have inherited black land. So this comes from my ancestors. My great-great-grandfather was the progenitor of over 1,000 acres of land located in Halifax, Virginia. I became the poster child in my family because I couldn't understand why nobody in the family would want, you know, not want to try to stop a partition sale. So it just so happened I was down in Halifax trying to pay some taxes on another property we own, because we owned like four or five parcels which were separated when my grandfather owned it and my grandmother. But now I'm reading all the stuff that Dr. Mitchell had, and it talks about from reconstruction to deconstruction, undermining black land ownership politically, independence, and community through partition sales. And that's where I fit in. And I decided that I would step forth and do the research of 8 years now. And I've dealt with all kind of legal roadblocks and paper, you know, trails that weren't true. I mean, they had all kind of stuff going on. But now I'm in the Supreme Court, thank God.
Of Virginia.
And, you know, we're fighting, and we need legal.
Well, we're going to ask people in the audience for help, but let me just go back for a minute. Melinda, your family has owned this land for how many years?
Since 1905.
And tell us where Halifax, Virginia is.
Halifax, Virginia is near the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's located close to Danville, Virginia, in South Boston. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Well, we have thousands of listeners. I'm sure some of them
may
be. And
I know somebody out there might know where it is. You might even have land there. But if you do have land there, please take time to read all the documents, go to the courthouse, do your research, talk to your elders, you know, understand what's going on with the paperwork, because the paperwork is where we fall short. If we don't do our discovery, and, you know, sometimes you don't get due process, they'll send it to the wrong address for your taxes or whatever. But, you know, if you do your work and also use the Uniform Law Commission, Partitions of Heirs Property Act, and also I think that if Virginia would accept in legislation, this new Partition of Heirs Property Act, that it would help so many people in Virginia, because Virginia is considered a Commonwealth state, so that means that they do law a different way.
Okay, I apologize for jumping in. You are basically in need of some legal assistance, and Professor Mitchell is going to share with us information, some good news about what's happening in some other states, but not Virginia. If there's anyone out there who has, who is an attorney or who knows an attorney and who has the ability to practice law in Virginia with a real estate license, how can they contact you, Melinda? What's the best way?
You could contact me through my website. Not my website, I'm sorry. You can email me at razzhyman@yahoo.com. Again, it's razzhyman@yahoo.com. razzhyman. Or you can reach me by telephone, 301-613-4247.
301-613-4247. You can also call the engineer here, Mike Nasella, 202-588-0893, and leave your number. We are almost out of time. We have about 2 minutes left. Or less. So, Professor Mitchell, you do have some good news. If you can quickly, in 1 minute, tell us what that good news is and then how people can contact you to hear more about it.
Sure. In terms of the issue that Melinda's dealing with, it's the action. It's called a partition action. And the American Bar Association, the Uniform Law Commission, myself, drafted a model state statute to basically secure, make more stable tenancy in common or heirs' property ownership. The statute's called the Uniform Partition of Heirs' Property. Heirs is H-E-I-R-S Act. And somewhat unbelievably, we've had six states now enacted into law, including states in the heart of the Deep South, Alabama, Arkansas, and Georgia. The South Carolina House of Representatives passed it unanimously, and it'll be taken up by the South Carolina Senate next year, and it's about to be introduced in the District of Columbia in the next 2 weeks. So if anybody wants to get involved in the effort to try to get an introduction and an enactment in one of the states that it hasn't been, including Virginia, they should contact me at T. Mitchell, that's T-M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L, at W-I, S as in Sam, C as in Cat, dot E-D-U, at T-Mitchell at WISC dot E-D-U, and I'd be happy to work with folks who want to spread the
good news.
The good news, right.
So, Professor Mitchell, thank you very much. Thank you to our sister here, Roz, Melinda Hyman. And we're going to be covering this story. This is an important story about theft of black land, stolen black land, part of the unfortunate and tragic reality of racism in this country. Thank you both. Thank you, everybody.
Thank
and thanks
you,
to you, Seth, for making sure that we got this on the air.